What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show. You're listening to Footy Prime, the podcast, with Danny Diccio, Craig Forrest, and James Sharman. Today, we welcome Jonathan Osorio, TFC's own. For myself, Jeff Cole, and producer extraordinaire, Dan Wong, and to all the mothers out there, cheers.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. Cheers to all the mums out there. It's a Mother's Day. I'm enjoying the Amsterdam 3-speed today. A crisp beer, lovely beer, so I very much appreciate that. Welcome to the show. It's going to be a fun one today. As you heard, we're going to be joined very shortly by, and this makes me feel really bloody old, Jonathan Osorio, Toronto FC's all-time leading appearance maker, even more than Danny Diccio. Yeah. I think he played like 8 times or something many years ago, but it makes me feel really old that Ozzo is the all-time appearance record holder for TFC. That's crazy. But before we get to football, I've got to ask Diccio, why are you wearing a suit, Danny?
If you're not watching this or on our YouTube channel and you're listening, Deech right now looks like he's in his coffin. He's wearing a suit. He's got his beard's all been dyed. You look like an accountant, a dead accountant, but an accountant.
That's weird, because my cousin in England said I look like Charles Bronson, which is a little bit different than what you guys said. But it's my mum's birthday today, so I've just got off the phone with her in England, wishing her happy birthday. And we always dress up for my mum's birthday and go out celebrate. So I thought I'd do it all the way from here in Canada and celebrate with her and have the gin and tonic online.
So it's birthday. The same day as Mother's Day in Canada.
Yeah, but in England, we don't have Mother's Day the same day as what you guys have over here or the rest of the world for some reason.
I know that, buddy. I lived there for fucking 20 years.
I'm just explaining it to the rest of the people here.
But last week, Deech wore like this retro 80s Detroit Pistons sweater, and now you're wearing a suit. What are you wearing beneath the camera line there, Deech? Are you wearing dress pants?
No, I got trousers on today because respect to my mum. Now to be shot. Fully head to toe.
So you look great, Deech. I've got to say, well done. Craig, however, has had, how would you say this, an adjustment to his appearance. Beneath the hat, Craig, go on, show us all. Look at that. It's a full Craig Forrest. I've got to tell you, it actually suits you. It ages you by about 10 years, but it suits you.
Fuck. Really?
Yeah, it does. You definitely look much older.
You look like Kojak.
I know. And what was the reason for it? Was it really that unkempt? Was it out of control before?
Oh yeah, it was all over the place. So my daughter started shaving it, and then it just went sideways, and it just lobbed it all off.
You got that like psychopath / pedophile look to you right now.
Oh man, really?
Yeah. It's different, but I would go with it.
How you went from it suits me to that, eh?
Well, yeah. No, you know, I've seen a lot of worse bald heads in my time.
Yeah.
Myself included. I've got a bumpy head. Your head's not very bumpy. It looks pretty smooth.
Well, whatever.
It's the new Craig Forrest.
Sean, you got a head like a rugby ball.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I've got a few dents from rugby. I think that's the issue. A few elbows and knees have done their damage over the years. Listen, boys, football is kind of back.
South Korea kicked off on Friday. Were any of you watching that?
A lot of people were. No, me neither. I had no interest. But a lot of our viewers / listeners who are like obsessive football types were tweeting about it. I had no interest. Deech, you're a bit obsessive.
Yeah, I watched a little bit because a Canadian player, a good friend of ours, a boy that came through the academy, Mr. Daniil Henry, was playing. So it was good to see Daniil back on the field. It's good just to see football back on the television. I didn't see much social distancing going on after they scored their goal, which actually pleased me because it would have been weird seeing players score a goal and everyone kind of celebrating or giving high fives, air high fives from 10 yards away. So I was glad to see that. I was just happy to see football back on the TV, as well as UFC last night as well. So
yeah.
Sports is coming back. We're on the downward curve to getting back to normal, people.
Did it feel like a real football match or more like a training match? Because when I watch games in Europe, for example, Europa Leagues or some of these games behind closed doors, it feels like a training session because you hear the actual instructions being barked out, that the players talking, as opposed to the roar of the crowd.
Well, you know what? As I mentioned, UFC last night, I thought was really good because you could actually hear the fist smashing against the face. But the football was a little bit weird for me. In an empty stadium, there wasn't much atmosphere, which is understandable. And you're right in what you're saying. It was kind of like a training match where you're watching it behind closed doors. And
are they allowing 5 substitutions?
I don't think they were yesterday. They're starting to do that in Germany, I know, for the first time. And they're going to do it, hopefully, when MLS starts and the Premier League. Yeah, I think this, especially if you're going to be playing Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Wednesday.
Yeah.
I think it's needed.
Will that keep it? Yeah, I was going to say, do you think they'll keep that? Will that stick around?
I have no issues with it.
Now, what about, in rugby, you have blood breaks, right? So if someone gets cut, you can go off the field and you can replace him for a short time. Do you think that might be something that football looks at some point?
Well, they already do it in youth football when we were playing this year in the USSDA. So if a player got hit on the head, he could come off and get assessed and replaced by a substitute. And when he was assessed and he's okay to go back on, he can go back on and the substitute that came on for him comes back off. But that was at youth level, academy level. So I'm not sure if they do that in any pro sports yet. I know NFL, they do something similar, don't they, Craig?
Well, yeah, but you're constantly changing positions, anyway. So it's not a big deal. Like, but football, could you imagine being a cynical person as I am at the international level? They're out of substitutions. You're absolutely out of your feet. Somebody's knackered. Next thing you know, oh, he's got a bang on the head. Pull him off.
Yeah.
You know, when you throw a fresh body on.
Yeah. Because football types are cheating bastards. Exactly. You can't trust them.
Do the right thing.
You mentioned Germany, Beach, and they're going to be back, as far as you know, this Saturday coming, right? Now I should mention, though, there's a big meeting in England on Monday. Now, by the time you listen to this podcast, that news could be out, whether they're going to restart or not restart. But right now, Germany began restricted training back in April. Now, listen, we know the teams won't be ready. Right, they're not getting the Danny Dicchio sanctioned 1 month training camp. Poor dears. What do you think the quality of play is going to be like next Saturday in Germany?
I think it's going to be rusty, rightly so. You got to remember, none of these players or teams have played any sort of game for in excess of 6 to 8 weeks now against opposition. And I think we all know you can play as many training games as you want, as many opposed games against players that you know in training every day or whether it be in a stadium. But as soon as you go on the field against an opponent, you're competing for a result. It's a totally different mindset.
And then, Deitch, you got on the other hand, too, they're going into this. Half the players must realize that this might not even go on as it is. Yeah. You know, they might play a few games. Somebody gets sick. I mean, what have they got? 3 Brighton and Hove players now? Tested positive. Is that because they're in relegation zone?
Yeah, I think so. I think some owners and presidents are going to be a little bit clever as well. I know that we spoke about Brescia's owner in Serie A last week saying that he wants the season null and void. It's only because he's bottom of Serie A and he's paying Balotelli ludicrous money and he wants to stay in Serie A for next year. Where the rest of the teams, they want to continue, they want to play Champions League, they want to get the season done. But at the end of the day, we have to think about, are we putting people's lives at risk? Are we in a situation where we can keep spreading this virus? Or are we going to be in an era or an environment where everything is crystal clear what people are doing? They're sanitizing properly. They're keeping social distancing properly in and around the game itself. And then when the players go on the field, it's a normal game. But how can you stop the virus spreading if players are playing a close contact sport like football anyway?
So it's a brand new mentality, right? Last week, Patrick Kendrick, who obviously living in Milan, was saying that their next phase in Italy this past week has been to learn to live with the virus.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big shift. And I wonder that's likely what we'll do here as well eventually, right? Learn to live with the virus among us, you know? And what does that look like? What does it mean? You know, who the hell knows? In Germany, it seems the league's putting a lot of pressure on the various regions beyond sports, saying, well, if we get some positive tests, we'll listen to the government and the authorities rather than having a plan themselves. They're kind of throwing it into their plan, which I'm not sure is very courageous, but I mean, what else can they really do, I suppose? But they're saying there'll be a maximum of 322 people in the stadium. That includes, obviously, players, coaching staff, medics, I guess some media, you know, logistics people in the stadium. So there'll be people in that stadium, and, you know, keeping them apart won't be that easy. But every league is watching Germany, that is for sure, starting next weekend. You know, we'll see. I'm just thankful to see some good football coming back. And Sportsnet World, that aired German Bundesliga for the last few years, well, Sportsnet's now throwing on all the channels, the main channels.
Yeah,
we fucking leave, and now they put it on the main channels. Jesus Christ!
Yeah. The reason for that.
There's a good reason. There's nothing else to show.
Remember our discussions about that league? Let's pump it up. That's all we got left, and they're just like,
don't want to.
Don't want anything to do with it. Fuck.
All it took was a global pandemic. Hey, if we should have been show some foresight here, fellas. And, oh boy! Anyway, listen. You mentioned MLS, Deitch. Their teams have been given permission to start training back last week in May the 6th. Don Garber says he's cautiously optimistic. There will be a season, of course. These summer leagues are more fortunate; they have got more time, of course. TFC are back in training of sorts. Tomorrow, as in Monday, we're now joined by, as I mentioned, really the face of Canadian football in Major League Soccer, one of the faces globally now of Canadian football. As I mentioned, is TFC's all-time appearance leader, Summer. I remember, I think, maybe doing his first game, I think, having to interview Ozo at halftime with some dumbass questions, which I apologize for, Ozo. But we're now joined by Jonathan Osorio, welcome to Footy Prime, mate. Thank you so much for joining us. You start training on Monday. How tough is that going to be for you physically? How fit are you 8 weeks into this thing?
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It's going to be even the first day of training will be, I think it'll be exciting just to get back on the pitch. I think because we've been limited to not being able to go to the pitches and I mean, I've been just running on the streets here in this neighborhood and trying to stay fit and doing workouts in the basement. So to get on the pitch and to touch the ball and to see teammates from obviously distance, I think it's good for the morale and a step in the right direction.
And then the lungs start to burn, and then you start remembering what it's like after you've been off for a while.
Yeah. Well, I think the lungs, because I've been running, so I think if we get into like group training, that's when I'll really feel the legs and the lungs. But I think for these individual trainings, it'll be, hard but modified. We will do as much as we can and difficult fitness, I guess. But I think when you get into more game situation, that's when you'll really feel it.
Well, let me ask you, so back in mid-March when the league came to a close, it's still early season, you're not at peak condition just at that point. Let's say you're 8 out of 10 fitness, right? And you'll be 10 out of 10 fitness mid-season. If you're 8 out of 10 fitness in middle of March, what are you now?
Probably half of that, maybe 4. If
really?
4 is like probably, yeah, maybe, because I mean, we haven't been playing games. We haven't even been training. I can imagine, and for some other guys, maybe even lower, but I would say half of that. It's very close. There's the only thing to be the only kind of fitness to kind of equal or emulate a game is playing actual games itself. So, everybody's going to be far off for sure.
Have you done any online stuff, John? Like with the other fitness instructors, strength and fitness guys?
Yeah. We've been doing online gym sessions. They've done a great job of getting us equipment. They've gotten I'm pretty sure everybody equipment to be using, whether it's stationary bikes or weights and stuff like that. So they've done a great job with doing that. And then we've been pretty much in groups doing our workout sessions almost every day. So yeah, we've been working and the workouts are hard. I gotta say they're tough, but again, there's nothing like being on the field and actually playing. There's nothing to equal that.
I'm trying to be 4 out of 10.
Shams, it's interesting. We're speaking about 4 out of 10, which Oso thinks he's at the moment. And I'm trying to compare it to where the Premier League or guys in Europe that have been through 3/4 of their season. And they're basically over the hurdle of being at their peak fitness and kind of coming down, seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, Craig, that we used to speak about in March and April, where you can kind of see your holidays or your vacations in the back of the tunnel and your fitness is just hanging on. Them guys are now going to have to go through another preseason to try and get themselves up to a level that they were at to finish the season, where guys in MLS to play two games. You play two games, yes, also? So
yeah.
These guys are not even at their peak fitness yet. You don't really get into a rhythm or a peak fitness until you probably six to eight games into the season, where you start feeling really comfortable and your recovery and your preparation is really, really tight. Mm. So I think it's going to be harder for those guys in Europe and the rest of the world than it is for the guys over here in North America. I'm not saying it's not going to be hard here, but I think the guys here in North America will jump on the fitness levels a lot quicker than they are in Europe.
Hey, Jonathan, yeah. Does it worry you what's going on in the States when you look at certain states are dealing with the coronavirus differently, and mm-hmm. teams in Houston, teams in Seattle, teams in California, teams in New York? Does that worry you just how, as a player, and how it is so spread out across the country in different ways, and how the league and how the country's dealing with it down there? And is that going to be a concern for players and everybody else involved?
For sure. I mean, we the start of the league depends on how everything is doing in the United States as well. So, you know, things here in Canada can start getting better as they are here. That doesn't mean nothing if New York keeps being, you know, keeps going the way it is, or California or wherever. And you know that's the thing. You can't leave one team out of it. It's the whole league, and it's so spread out. It's definitely something you think about. It's a concern. It's something that leaves you with without answers of when really this league can start up again. And it's tough sometimes. It's tough and to think about, but you know, you try to stay positive and take it day by day.
Are you confident, John, that you know, you will see football again this season? That MLS, it might be delayed another month, 2 months, who knows, and likely in empty stadiums, but you will be playing football at some point this season?
I think so. At some point this season, we will be playing. Of course, it depends on how the numbers go down there, if things start to get better. But I believe and I hope that things will get better eventually, and we'll be playing games, of course, in close stadiums.
It's crazy. It must be so strange for footballers in that, you know, you have this preseason back in earlier this year, and you get together and you see a group forming and coming together. But as football is, you know, every season the team looks different, the squad looks different. And here you are with this. It's not a lost season, like you said, just yet. There's going to be probably football in some capacity, but who knows what it looks like. But, I mean, who knows what this team looks like, you know, in the coming months. And then looking ahead to next year, when maybe some normalcy resumes for the first time in maybe a year or so, how this club looks different. And as a veteran now, and crazy to say you're a veteran at TFC, do you think about that and how your current team might change given what's happening this season and the delay?
Yeah, you think about, you know, the June and July transfer window coming right up. You never know. Will FIFA allow transfers to go? Like, there's so many questions that need answers, and right now we don't have them, right? So, and then you think about, you know, guys being off for so long, and you know, it might take others, you know, a bit longer to you know, adapt themselves and to find their form again. So there's so many things. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. We could have new players, we could have players leave. It's crazy. The team could be totally different, and how it looks when we do resume. You just don't know.
What about your employees, your employer, John MLSE? They have all this sports franchises with the Raptors, obviously the Leafs and you guys and the Argonauts. Is there a pressure on them as an employer to make sure that you guys are safe as well before they let you go back into the United States, perhaps, and put yourselves in maybe harm's way and bringing something back? And secondly, I have to say that MLSE, from a charitable side of things, have been absolutely fantastic in this pandemic, and joining in with Conquer COVID and other great initiatives with food banks and whatnot. I know you've done your part at some hospitals with sick kids. They've been great from that perspective. But from the coronavirus and being an employer, how much pressure do you think is on them to allow any of their teams to go back into competition?
I think there's a bit of pressure. It's tough, man, because people, I think, during these times, they want to see sports. They're itching for some positivity, and sports is a huge part of that in our lives today. And so I think it's the pressure of, you know, they want to get going, but at the same time they have to take care of us and make sure that the health, our health comes before anything. It's tough, but they've been doing a great job. I mean, I know with TFC, they've been treating us so great with our training sessions and our communication, and you know, our cooks are giving meals. They're giving meals to us as well, getting meals to us so that we are still eating right. Amazing. The things that the company is doing is amazing. But again, our league starting again all depends on how our neighbor down south is doing as well. And so for that reason, you don't really know what to expect.
What do you think you'll notice the first thing you get on that football field? Will it be your touch? Will it be, you know, mentally, you know, how you're thinking the game through? Will it be fitness? What's the one thing that you're a bit concerned about when you get a ball at your feet?
I think fitness, for me personally, it's going to be fitness. The ball on my feet, I mean, I think I've played for so long now that it will come back. Like, for any footballer, it will eventually come back, and you will know how to touch the ball and get the rhythm. You'll be rusty, yes, but you will never forget how to play football, you know. But it's the fitness. I think for sure the fitness is going to be tough.
Key thing, James, as well, is many players have an off-season program where they're just running. So a lot of our guys are either running in the street, or they're finding a park or a field where they can do some extended running. But a key thing for me when I used to go back to preseason as a player was, all right, I'm okay to do this straight line running, but it's when you start turning, the agility, mm-hmm. and when you start incorporating a ball, because when you're running without a ball, you're basically, your head is up straight, you're just looking ahead of you. But now you have a ball at your feet, you're having to look at where the ball is, as well as trying to keep running. And it really fucks with your dynamics in your head. And that really, really puts pressure on you fitness-wise as well. So incorporating a ball, starting to turn, agility, all that stuff incorporated really tests your fitness levels.
Yeah, exactly. It's different running, you know, without the ball, of course, and you can become so fit at that and have no problems with that. But there, like I said, there's nothing like the game, you know, dealing with turns and you know, contact with people and you know, dribbling with the ball, of course. Like, that sharpness might, you know, at first will definitely not be where it should be, but
yeah, so I think everything is going to be tough at first, everything. But for me, the biggest thing is when we actually, if and when we get into group training, that will be the tough part.
Hey, Jonathan, I want to change subjects a little bit. You're a hometown boy playing for your hometown club, which is just an amazing opportunity, an amazing thing that you've done and made a career in your hometown. But your road and your career getting here and your path to Toronto FC was out of the country in Uruguay with Lucas Cavallini. Tell us a little bit about that. And did that help with your development as a player when you came back to Canada physically, mentally, tactically? Did that help you? Must have.
Oh, for sure. I always tell everybody that asks me this question, that experience going overseas to Uruguay and being in a club like Nacional is everything for my career. Everything. I'm not the player I am today without that experience. And I think the biggest thing that it helped me was mentally and tactically, for sure. More mentally, and I say more by mental, I mean my passion for the game. My passion for the game grew so much being around the people down there and seeing how, they live for the sport. They live for their club. It's just so different to what we're used to here in Canada. And I love that. I absolutely love that. I was fortunate enough to go down and know the language. So it wasn't so tough for me. It wasn't such a tough transition, but it was still tough. It was still tough to be a kid from Canada and going down there and trying to find your spot and trying to find your place with the kids down there. But an amazing experience. Yeah, I went with Lucas Cavallini, who, one of my best friends today. And, we got to share that experience and at a really good club too. People get to go overseas, but not everybody gets the fortune of being at such a historic and big club in that country. And luckily for me, I had that opportunity, and I'm so thankful for it every day.
Did you notice that how the game had evolved here in Canada from when you left for Uruguay to when you came back? Was there an obvious difference that the game was going in the right direction at that point?
Yes, for sure. I think before and when I went to Uruguay, it was still growing, and there were still a lot of things that needed to improve, I think. And the academy was very young at the time. It only just started. And to be honest, I never had an opportunity in the academy at those times. So Uruguay was my opportunity. When I came back, the structure and everything was very professional. It was finally, I think, feeling like a professional environment and feeling to what I had in Uruguay, or not so different at least. And I think that for me was a big difference for me, seeing that, the football is catching up here to the rest of the world now, as far as structure and development and now even passion. Because from when I started playing to the passion to the fans that we have now, the passion and the love that people have for the game has grown. It's been unbelievable to be a part of.
Deitch, did you when you saw John obviously when he was very young at the academy, did you see a big difference when he came back from Nacional?
Well, to be honest, I didn't see Johnny before he left to go to Uruguay. I can't remember what year it was you went. When did you go, John, to Uruguay?
I went to Uruguay 2000 and
seven or eight, was it?
No. Okay. It was later. I think it was 2010. Yes, 2009 or 2010. I think 2010.
So he went out there at a younger age, and as you said, the academy did not start at TFC till 2008. So I finished my career, and then I was lucky enough to work with the first team for a little bit, but then the club asked me if I wanted to coach, so I moved into the academy, and I said, this is great for me in my development as a coach. And at the time, we just brought Osso's little brother in, and it's one of our younger teams. Nicky Osso was with the 98 group, who we were just starting to assemble. And there was a stage where I think we played a game against, I think it was SC Toronto. Was it Osso who you was playing for?
Yeah.
I was kind of coaching my team, but I was watching. I knew a lot of players on the opposite team. But there was a kid that I thought was working head and shoulders above everyone else, and it was Osso. And I spoke to Carl Masako, who I knew, and I think Osso knew him as well. And then I said, look, is it possible for you to come in with your dad and possibly we can have a little talk about bringing you in, or at least for some training sessions with my group, with the intention of getting him in with the first team group, because he was a little bit of an older player for our academy team. And so we agreed on that. Also came in with his dad just to go over just the details and just to speak about what I could promise at that time. And it was basically just training sessions with my group at that time. And also came in for around 3 months with my group. And I think the head coach at the time was Ryan Nelson, and Jimmy was in with that group. And I said, look, guys, for me, this boy is at a different level than our kids that we've got in our team. And it wasn't that he was dribbling through like Maradona and just taking everyone on and banging goals. He was just at a different level in understanding the game, seeing the game, his game intelligence, his first touch and speed of play was at 3 or 4 levels higher than what our academy players were. So I kept knocking on the door, and I was getting very frustrated. It came to pre-season and also was still with my group, training with my U19 team. And then it was just by fortune that Jimmy called me and said, look, we're a player down with the first team and we're going, I think you were going to Florida or somewhere on a pre-season trip. He said, I think we're going to have a look at your boy Johnny and bring him in with some other players that we're looking at from Vancouver and other older players that we had with the team. And that was it. That was my small part. I saw a kid that could play at a decent level that was night and day above what we had in the academy. And I thought he was deserving of his chance with the first team. It took a little bit of time. But after that, after knocking on the door and getting him in, it was all up to Osso, and the rest is history.
I mean, Osso, you've always been a fan favorite at TFC, you know, local boy. But, you know, you've had your trials and tribulations. You've really earned, I think, your spot the last couple of years in particular, you know. Tell us about, you know, that room and some real big characters, big personalities. You know, I'm talking about Josie and Michael. I mean, I imagine that they don't suffer fools gladly. Were they hard to prove yourself to, or were they welcoming? What's that room like?
No, they were. I mean, for me personally, they were welcoming. I think Michael brought the mentality, the great mentality culture that we have now at the club. He's the one that brought that winning mentality, wanting, you know, training every day, you know, at your best, training like it's a game. And so he brought that, and he expected that of everybody. Not, you know, didn't matter if you were a veteran or a rookie. But at the same time, for me, I think they saw the quality that I had, and they were very welcoming. They didn't put pressure on me to be, you know, to be a great player right away. They saw, I think, potential, and kind of they are happy to play with me and you know, encourage me a lot. So I think it's a great environment that we have in there for young players. I think, especially even this year, what I've seen in preseason, we have a lot of guys that we've been signing, a lot of young kids, and you know, they have the support of everybody. Everybody wants them to do well, but at the same time, you know, they demand a high standard. So I think that balance makes it, you know, really good and gives young players a chance to succeed at this club.
When you being one of the only Canadian players, regulars on the team, do you feel a responsibility, especially as a local lad, and a little extra pressure put on you because of that?
Sometimes, but I don't. It's not a pressure that's bad. It's a good pressure, I think. It makes me play better. Makes me feel more proud and work harder to continue that. I think it's important for people to see a Canadian or Canadians in the team and doing well. And, you know, and through the years, it's not only been me, there's been others, but I've tried to be a consistent player on the pitch. And not only, I don't find that pressure. Honestly, most of that pressure comes from myself. I want to be on the field all the time because that's what I want to be. That's what I want to do.
But at the same time, I do think that I represent the city at this club and the people and the young players coming in. And I think it's my responsibility to do everything I can to keep being an important part of the team.
There's some math here, right? I think you're 27, right? Or thereabouts right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, so do you remember Craig as a footballer or as a broadcaster?
I remember Craig getting a shutout against Colombia at the 2000 Gold Cup. So winning MVP. So I remember him as a footballer for sure.
All right, sit down, Craig.
Also, did you have a Colombia jersey on or a Canada jersey on that day?
I'll be honest. I had a Colombia jersey before the game, but it changed quickly after the game.
Man, awesome. 20 years ago, you were 7 years old or thereabouts.
Sorry, Sharms, I was going to ask you. In the last few years, you've got this goal-scoring touch that's come into your game. Was it there before, or is it more of a tactical thing, positioning where you are? Is it why you're getting more opportunities? Did you always have that in you, or has that been somewhat of a surprise to you as your career's developed?
You know, I really believe it was always, you know, as a young player, I mean, I know in the youth it's a little bit different, but I always score goals. I was known for that, actually. And then as I got older, I moved into the midfield and it was a little bit less, but I was still finding my way. And in my first year, I scored 5 goals and I scored 5 goals in starting maybe 20 games. So I always had it in me. I think as the new reign came in and as new players came in, I felt the pressure to score goals, but then the pressure came to stay on the field and win my place on the team. So I was focused more on all the other things, I think, because I knew they were bringing in guys to score goals. That wasn't my role as much as I wanted it to be. So I kind of had to learn a balance of how to win my position on the team, find my time to score, but also do the job that my coach is asking me for. And once I think I got the confidence of Greg Vanney that, you know, I showed him a couple of times of myself getting into the box and making late runs. Once I got his confidence, he gave me more of that freedom. And then we saw, obviously, I had that year in 2018 where I scored whatever many goals. And now that's, you know, that confidence stays with me. And now I look to score goals. Now it's something that I look to do. So I honestly, Craig, I really think it was always in me. I had to find the way to show it at this level.
Was part of that way, was that actually having a conversation with Greg and Vanny and to sort of say that, listen, give me a chance to get more opportunities up front because I can deliver?
Yes, a little bit. Not really. I'm not really that player to – I like to – earn my chances by on the field, you know, by showing and not that going to the coach and telling him is a bad thing. Maybe looking back, I should have said, you know, maybe just trust me to go to the net a little bit. I can score goals, but I'm a little bit of a shy, just I have to earn my things on the pitch. And so I just found a way playing those games to find those moments that I could get into the box. And when I got into the box, I knew I had to make good of it in this moment because it may not come again in the game. And if I do, I'll actually have that freedom to do it more. So, you know, it was just, you know, waiting for my chance and reading the game and learning the game more and finding my chance to do it more in the game.
Is your mentality any different when you step over to the national team? Obviously, you mentioned at TFC, you're surrounded by some pretty big name players. And then you go to Canada and, you know, there's some kids there who are going to be really big names, you know, perhaps including yourself. But is your role different there when you step into that room?
Now, yes, because we have such young kids. It's so different. It's pretty cool to think about. And TFC, you know, the big names are guys that are maybe toward the end of their careers, whereas now our big names in the national team are guys that are just starting.
Yeah. So it's so different, and it's crazy to see that, you know, these the big names in Toronto FC don't look up to me. You know what I mean? They've had their careers and they know what they have to bring. Whereas these young players in this national team, I feel they respect me and they do look up to me in a sense. And that's a good feeling. It's a good feeling. And I've tried to never, you know, look down or look up at people. I truly believe that I can play at any level. That's what I believe. Even though I play at MLS, I don't let that bother me when I go into a field and playing against beside or against a guy in the, I don't know, in the Premier League or the Bundesliga. For me, that doesn't matter. For me, it's your quality of the player. And that's the way I look at it. And so in the national team, I'm more of a veteran guy in that kind of squad. I actually have, I'm probably fifth in the regular squad, fifth in the appearances, even though I don't have so much, but I do have more experience than these guys. And so it's a little bit different for sure. It's my role, I guess, in the team is, as far as leadership, is different in both teams.
John, do you see yourself 2026? It has to be something that you must look forward to, in the fact that if you're healthy, you'll still be at the age where you could still contribute to the national team for sure. Is that something you thought about being a part of?
Yeah, of course. I've thought about it a little bit, but if I'm being honest, Greg, I don't really look past 2022. I really don't. I still, it's my goal. It's what I look forward to. And I think, you know, we have a chance, especially now with all this happening. The format for qualification has to change, and it might benefit us. So we're fortunate, and you know, I think it's a kind of meant to be thing. I truly believe in. So right now, I only look forward to 2022. 2026 is, you know, something that, you know, I can look forward to after 2022. Hopefully, we qualify and we can do that. But if you ask me if I plan on being part of that team, 100%. 100%.
Any thoughts on the current FIFA rankings system, Jonathan?
Yeah, I think of them probably the same as you guys. You know, it's something, and or was something. Who knows now? But yeah. The format and everything. It kind of wasn't fair. It kind of wasn't fair, I think, and. But, you know, it is what it is, or it was what it was, whatever it is. And I really think that, you know, football has a funny way of working. And I have a good feeling of where we move forward from here.
There's one thing, Charms, about the ranking system. And there's another thing when they actually use it for competition where you do rank in them. You know what I mean? Like it's loose kind of guidelines of where people stand, and you can kind of talk about it, discuss it, but then they use it for, you know, where you sit. I mean, I remember even the World Cup for Brazil 2014, when they were in South Africa, I believe it was, for the draw, the coaches were there thinking they were going to use the ranking system from that particular time, and FIFA go, oh, okay, we're going to do the draw for CONCACAF, but we're going to use ranking from about 6 months before. All of a sudden, Dale Mitchell's like, oh, hold on a shit. That's a completely different place where we were, right?
Yeah, in
Europe at the same day, you know, and all these different things. So anyway, it's just the fact that they use it for competition and where people rank is just, you know, sideways, stupid.
I agree. I think there has to be a more logical way of you know, earning your place into the World Cup, like a fair way, and whether it was to start, you know, World Cup qualifying right after the last World Cup. And so you get the process going so that you get a group stage before the Hex, and you have to actually qualify for the Hex like it was before. I don't know. I honestly don't really know how it worked out to be what it was. But I don't think it's fair.
Yeah. Follow South American qualifying is fantastic, right? And it's this one table. It's incredible.
And I think – Sorry, I think it's because also they have 10 nations, yes. So it's a little bit, it's a little bit easier. You can just do, you know, a league style qualification, which is great. You know, that would be everybody's, I think, ideal way of qualifying for a World Cup. But
pre-qualifying, perhaps, you know. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, CONCACAF. Okay, there's not 10 very good teams, right? Mm-hmm. There's eight decent teams. There's six good teams, which Canada is in there now, I think. You know, there's a way around it, pre-qualifying. But anyway, we could go on that topic for a very long time. Let's be honest, I think we're all in the same boat.
Yeah.
A couple of questions from some of our listeners here for you, Ozo. Mike says, it's a bit unfair, it's a bit tough. You've heard it before, I'm sure, before. After 197 matches with TFC, do you see yourself finishing your career in Toronto? Would you like to apply your talents abroad in Europe?
197 MLS matches. Right, I guess he was talking about.
No,
I'm just joking. do I see myself playing abroad? I'll be honest, it's always been a dream of mine, and I'm not shutting the door on that. I won't shut the door on that. I mean, I know I'm 27 years old, and in football these days, of course, when teams. It's very well known that European teams, when they look overseas for a player, they're looking for a young player. But you know, sometimes you get the odd one where they're getting a player that's ready to contribute, and I feel that would be me. So it's always been a dream of mine. I truly believe that I can play at the level of Europe, but at the same time, I would not be opposed to finishing my career at TFC. Actually, I would love to finish my career at TFC. Even if going abroad.
Which leagues did you watch growing up? I mean, obviously not too many available through mainstream TV here. Premier League, bit of Spain, bit of France. What was the one league in particular?
I followed every league. Watching, like you said, there wasn't a lot. I watched a lot of Serie A when I was a kid on TLN, because they're showing on TLN. And Premier League as well. Premier League was on TV a lot. So I watched a lot of Premier League. And then when I could, if we got out the channel, I would watch the La Liga. But I watched a lot of Serie A, actually, because I am growing up, I was a Real Madrid. I was very into the Galacticos. Mm-hmm. But I also enjoyed Inter Milan. Inter Milan was a club that I was really interested in as well.
Okay. That's interesting. Deitch, of course, some experience there. Listen, fellas, should we get to our five-a-side teams and keep Ozo on here? Do you mind staying on for a bit longer there, Ozo?
No, yeah, not at all.
All right, so I put this out to the fellas earlier this week, and both Craig and Danny have done no preparation for this. Thanks, boys. Despite the email and the texts. So it's a bit of a chestnut. You know, people have done this for years, but it's fun. Name your all-time, your favorite five-a-side team. If you could pick a five-a-side team, it's not necessarily the best team, you know, in the world, but who would you want to play with? But put yourself in that team as well, okay? So you've got five out players, and you've got one goalkeeper, all right? It's five of size, so tactically, who gives a shit? We'll start with you, Ozo, and then we'll make fun of your selections, and then we'll go around the table. I want to hear Dan and Jeff here as well, because that's going to be extremely amusing. Ozo, you start with, what's your five of size team, including yourself?
Well, in goal, I don't think my five of size team won't have the best, I guess, players in history, but some players that I've enjoyed watching. And in goal, I don't know. The Colombian goalkeeper.
Yes.
He was scorpion kick, exactly. You know, he does free kicks and everything. I would love to have him in goal. He would take my penalties in my side. Center back, I'd have Cannavaro. Center back. A defense, Cannavaro. I think I have one. I'll leave him by himself there, and he can take care of everything. And then I would have Messi, Cristiano, and Zidane.
That's decent.
Ooh. Yeah,
an offensive team. Yeah, I like that. Yeah,
very offensive.
Yeah, Higuita might do some stupid things every now and again and concede some.
Yeah,
you've got enough firepower there to get the goals back. Although only one ball in the field, right? It's a problem. Just one ball. So you got to share it around those fellas.
Yeah, that would be tough. It wouldn't really work out, but I would just enjoy every individual as they touch the ball.
That's great. All right, Craig, how about you? Have you some time to think about this now? Precious?
Yeah, it's very, actually, you know, I have.
Okay, good.
Okay, so I have to be, I'll be in goal because I can't put myself anywhere else.
Okay. Ooh, right? Bobby Moore, center back.
Oh.
Johnny Wark in midfield.
Oh.
Messi, I thought Ronaldo, but those two would be just hogging the ball from each other because they wouldn't play well. So I threw in Zola.
Oh, nice. Is he free kicks too?
Cool. Am I missing one?
I think you're missing one, right?
Yeah. Zidane. Zidane's got to be in there, didn't he?
Yeah. Can't get him with Zizou.
No.
All right, that's decent as well. All right, Deitch?
I'm going to go quickly here. I'd have Edison in goal because he played football out. Outfield position when he was younger, and he can absolutely hammer a ball as well. So he'd take my penalties.
He'd score with some goals for you, wouldn't he?
So, yeah. I would have Franco Baresi at the back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Maldini. Maldini would be on the left hand side.
Oh, unbeatable.
Baresi. So he'd be a little flank guy for me. I'd have Pirlo in the midfield.
Yeah.
And then. I think I would throw Gascoigne in there just for the English twist as well.
And you're
I love Paul Gascoigne. No, I wouldn't put myself in. I'd put Fat Renault.
If you read what I asked you to do,
I'll be on the bench. I'll be on the bench.
Guys? One day you'll be an ex athlete as well. Okay. All right, one day. And you're in the arses, let me tell you.
Hey, Deke, it looks like you're still hung up on the fucking collar. Have you taken that.
It's a coat hanger out of that thing. It's a burial suit, isn't it?
It's still got the coat hanger in it.
Yeah, I'd have Fat Ronaldo up top and Badger or Pillow in midfield.
All right.
Yeah. Romario would have been good up top too, eh? Romario, Bebeto, one of those two.
But we wouldn't know whether he'd turn up in time because he'd be fucking at a nightclub till 6 in the morning.
All right, should we go to Wenger now? I want to hear Wenger's favorite. In that he discovered soccer about 6 months ago.
Give us your best basketball five.
Mine's pretty easy. Yeah, mine's pretty easy. It's guys I like to party with. So I need Dicchio on the team now because if you can tell he'd get you out of jail. He'd party with you till 4. And because he got his law degree over the last weekend, we need him to get us out of jail because he's a solicitor now.
I could talk our way out.
Forrest can keep rolling things all night long. So
rolling what?
Forrest and Nets. You won't get a shot on him. And then probably like two or like Zidane, he'd be coming in with the hash. He'd be perfect. And then Pelé. You need a Pelé doing his, you know, little Pelé. I think Osorio will have to join our team because of that great haircut he brought on our show.
I'm gonna say, yeah. Quarantine hair.
That's a quarantine haircut.
Compared to John. Look what he got.
You're usually so well groomed. Jesus, man, you look like an ape.
Yeah, but it's very versatile.
Yeah, I got hair.
Yeah, exactly. What do you? Like, me and Deitch are sitting there going, "I wish I could have any hairstyle."
Look at this one. Look at this stuff here. Look at this.
Fuck off.
Sorry, pal. All right, Jeff.
You look good, Sharon. You look good.
No, I don't look terrible. It's like a bag of shit, like Deitch said last week. I do. I'm not good. All right, Jeff. What's your team?
So a lot of my players have already been picked. Am I allowed to sub them off onto my team?
Sure.
Okay. So first of all, Oso, you're on. You gotta be, because top notch.
Appreciate that, man.
Deitch, you gotta be on now. Like not back when you were playing, but now. And you have to wear what you're wearing on the pitch. Yeah. I have to go with Fat Ronaldo, and that's.
And I'm surprised that you said that because I'm like, oh, I'm gonna get them with this joke, Fat Ronaldo, but no, missed out.
And then. I'm going to bring in Neil Ruddock, Razor, because I've partied with him before, and he basically almost pimped out his wife to me, which is hilarious.
Yeah,
Razor.
But then in goal, I mean, obviously there's only one, you know, tall blonde, you know, legend, and that is Peter Schmeichel, of course. Oh wait, sorry, sorry, Craig. That you're the other one, so you know.
Hey, when did you party with Razor?
Who, me?
No, I know you did, Craig, but Jeff, when did you party with Razor Ruddock?
In 2009, I was in London with one of my mates, and he's like, "Holy shit, that's Neil Ruddock." I'm like, "Who?" He's like, "That's Neil Ruddock." And all his buddies are like, "Holy shit, it's Razor." I'm like, "I don't know who this guy is." They're like, "Let's go talk." I'm like, no, that's Razor." I'm like, "I don't care. I don't know who this guy is." So I went up. I'm like, "Hey, man, my cousin and all his buddies are huge fans." He's like, "All right." Comes over. We're having drinks. And his wife was really upset that she wasn't the center of attention, because I think she was like a Playboy bunny or something at one point. So she did everything she could to, you know, show us what she had. And we definitely could have played with those balls all night. But
yeah.
But anyway, that man is a beast and he can drink.
Oh, man. Different class. He was by then, he was pretty fat, eh?
He was a big guy. He was a really large guy.
One day we'll get Dunlop on again, and he'll tell you the story about how Benfica picked up his ex-girlfriend. Or was it his current? Anyway, a girlfriend of his once upon a time, or tried to, like the team Benfica there in town. Nuno Gomes was there, and it's a good story anyway. He was not happy about it at all. Anyway, my team is Bruce Grobbelaar, Aaron Goal. It's got to be Bruce.
We don't want to hear yours.
Okay, right. All right. Well, let's be fully prime. You're a prick. You know, just because you shaved your hair off. No, you're not. Jesus Christ.
Go ahead. I'm just kidding,
you fucker.
Go ahead. I like Bruce Grobbelaar. He's a fucking like
Bruce. Legend. Yep. No, he's my all time favorite.
No, go ahead.
At the back, Des Walker. Right. I've never seen a defender defend as well as Des Walker. Now, I was a kid when he played at Forest, of course, but man, you could not beat him. I'd be kind of in the midfield just watching everyone play around me because I'm terrible. John Barnes would be in a forward role with Gazza. Yeah, and then up top, Ronaldinho.
Oh, okay. None of us said Ronaldinho.
No, he says, no, any players maybe feel the love and joy of the game more than him. He was incredible. Just so much fun to watch. Always smiling. Ugly as sin. Oh,
Jesus. He likes fake passports, apparently.
He's done time, hasn't he? I know.
Apparently, he's playing with the prisoners. Like, I don't know what's going on with him.
Yeah,
what was he doing anyway?
I think, you know what? Someone told me this recently, and he didn't need to do it, put it that way. It was unnecessary.
Did he think he wasn't going to be recognized?
I think he was traveling within Brazil. He was traveling, and he didn't need, obviously, a passport. But for some reason, he got caught. And he got busted, yeah. Yeah, it's very odd. But boy, you could dribble.
Yeah. Oh my God, never.
Yeah.
Amazing.
He was trying to import all that Afro sheen.
Is that say something Deech uses in his beard? Afro sheen?
Yeah.
Unbelievable, Deech. That's unbelievable now.
You look like a character from Team America. Burka. All right, listen, we're out of time, I think, right? Are we Dan? Wonger, is it time? Wonger, is it time? Are we finished?
Wonger's on a delay.
Yeah, we're good.
Wonger's on Mars.
Fastest hour in the block.
It is, yeah. Well, listen, that was a lot of fun. Okay, thanks so much. Great. We really appreciate that. Enjoy training on Monday. Get back in that field, pal. We want to see you back at Primo Field.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Thanks, John. I really appreciate you coming on, buddy.
Thanks, guys.
Good luck for the season, and it's great to see a Canadian doing so well, and a Canadian MLS team is fantastic. And keep it up, and good luck with the national team as well, because exciting times ahead, I think.
Thank you. Thanks, Craig. I appreciate that. It means a lot. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
So, you're welcome back anytime. All right, guys and girls, we hope you enjoyed that. Make sure you follow us on all our social media platforms, be it Twitter, be it Facebook. Are we on Instagram as well? We are, right?
Oh, yeah,
okay, I should know that kind of stuff. Yeah, we're on Instagram.
Amsterdam.
Our thanks to Amsterdam Brewery, of course. What's that one there, Jeff? What was that?
This is Cerveza Fria. So this is basically Amsterdam's answer to Corona without the virus. So, it's a nice 4.5, very little bit of a lime hint in there, but very, very good, very drinkable.
Interesting. So
I'll tell you what, I'm going to make sure that next week we all have some of this to try. As well, there's a couple
couple other new brews that have come out that I'm going to make sure we all have some of to try.
Look forward to that. Yeah, and the weather's improving. It's definitely coronavirus drinking weather. That's for sure. All right, everyone. DeanBundell.com, our home away from home. Thank you once again for supporting us. Deech, Craig, Wonga, Jeff, and also, this has been an absolute pleasure. We'll be back same time, same place next week. Cheers for listening.
What up, Primers? JC here. Can't get enough of Footy Prime, the podcast? Why not head over to Footy Prime's YouTube? Head to youtube.com/footyprime for exclusive video content. Then make your way over to wearefootyprime.com for all things Footy Prime, including our official gear from Admiral and our One Ball Gin from Nickel 9 Distillery. And make sure to follow and subscribe across all platforms, from Twitter to Instagram to Facebook to TikTok. Footy Prime has got you covered for all things footy. Thanks so much for listening, and back to the show. Show.